Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. It's 2019 and you're back with the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. Now with over 6 million unique listeners in 178 countries, I'm Brett King and I'm joined today by my co-host and my good pal, Jason Henricks. Jason, thanks
for joining us. Hello, happy new year.
Indeed, indeed. Also joining us are our good pals, Jim Marus, from the Financial Brand, and Ron Shevlin from Cornerstone Advisors to talk about predictions for 2019, which we think will have merit, which will fall short in terms of expectations. This is our first official podcast of 2019. There's lots to cover since we've been away for the holiday break. Last week we aired one of my favorite episodes, actually. It was from the holidays in 2017, featuring Ben Goertzel, the founder and CEO of Singularity.net and the chief scientist behind the creation of the robot android Sophia, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with. That episode was called AI and Robots with Ben Goertzel. You can have a listen on Voice America on our website, breakingbanks.com, or iTunes or SoundCloud or wherever you get your Breaking Banks fix. Now, before we begin, I have great news to share. Our yearly listening report is in from Voice America. And just on the Voice America channel alone this year, we reached 1.26 million listeners. That doesn't include, obviously, our AM band syndication, SoundCloud, Spotify, the syndication we do through other platforms like American Banker. So, really bumper year for us. And I thank you guys all for your support. So, Jason, who do we have as guest for today?
Well, Brett, we have no shortage of hot topics and thought leaders to share their opinions. And now if you were in the studio at American Banker today instead of, where are you, the Alps somewhere? Is that where you are? Yeah, so you know that Penny Crossman from our partner American Banker is leading the editorial on news today. And CES is kicking off in Las Vegas. It is in full swing. And Voice Central is, or Voice First is a central theme. So in the first segment, we'll be catching up with Brian Romilet, president of Multiplex, and Elizabeth Robbins from Best Innovation Group to tell us what they saw around voice in Las Vegas and where they see the trends. And then in the second half, we'll be joined by Alex Lightman, CEO of Token Communities, to talk about his podcast and how thought leaders and organizations are making the leap towards becoming content creators. And our own expert content creators, Ron and Jim, will be joining us for that discussion. And speaking of great content, today's show is brought to you by the Digital Banking Report, a newsletter published by our very own Jim Marus. And he's got a new report out right now, the 2019 Retail Banking Trends and Predictions. Now, one of the things I like best about DBR and Jim's content in general is that he mixes industry data and perspectives from thought leaders with color commentary that really helps you make sense of it all. So go to digitalbankingreport.com, and the Trends Report is the number one thing you'll see. I'd say do it right now, but you should really pay attention and listen to the show because we do have a great
and
one.
And we've got contributions on that report from all the top influencers and fintech leaders from around the world. How many people contributed this year, Jim?
Over 80, and I was really fortunate this year because we also have articles from a lot of the Breaking Banks contributors. Yourself, obviously, awesome. Ron, Chris Skinner, Ron Shevlin are all contributors as far as articles in the report this year. So, it's
118
pages, the largest report we've ever done.
Fantastic. And Jim, why don't you kick us off then? Why don't you tell us about the conference scene this year? And I want to tap you to do it because I swear you are speaking at just about every single one of you are on the road nonstop like Brett. So what do we have for conferences coming up?
Well, first of all, we have Finovate Europe, which is coming up on February 12th to 14th in London. It's showcasing cutting-edge fintech demos, as most people know, real-world applications provided by business leaders with hundreds of financial institutions participating. As Jason mentioned earlier, on February 14th, Brett, JP, and myself will all be on stage for Breaking Banks Live at Finovate Europe. Use a discount code to save 20% on the admission. The code is BANKS, banks 20. So banks 20. Sorry about that. New for this year will be a deep dive summit day on AI and open banking, a new world-class venue, and an AI-powered meeting app to help provide people with ways to connect to people that matter most to them. Some of the breaking banks and Provoke management team will be working on plans to be there, so stay tuned. And in the meantime, tickets are available at Finovate.com using the code BANKS20. Provoke Media is also the podcast partner for Seamless Middle East coming up April 10th to 11th in Dubai. Seamless is a dynamic summit and large-scale exhibition bringing together the converging worlds of e-commerce, retail, payments, fintech, and identity. This is a two-day conference, and tickets are $1,500. But again, if our listeners want to get a 50% discount on the current early bird rate, they can basically use a code. It would be seamless-expo.com/me. That's seamless-expo.com/me. And that will get a great discount on the two-day conference pass. Finally, for those looking for something in the U.S., the Financial Brand Forum runs from April 15th to the 17th in Las Vegas. There you can experience the world's largest and most complete conference on marketing, customer experience, data analytics, and digital transformation in the banking industry. The Financial Brand Forum is expecting over 2,000 senior leaders from more than 750 financial institutions will be attending in 2019. In fact, I was just talking to Jeffrey Pilcher yesterday, and there are already 1,400 people signed up for the event. That is more than they had 3 years ago. So it's filling up very quickly. Some of the keynote speakers include Guy Vaynerchuk and Barbara Corcoran from the Shark Tank.
Hey, did you see, talking about Gary Vaynerchuk, Jim, did you see that he just announced on Instagram today he's doing something with The Rock, with Dwayne Johnson?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's everywhere.
Talk about two very popular people that are everywhere, just like you are, but they're
in a different league on social media for sure, but...
And finally, if there's something you want to share, anybody on the radio broadcast today want to share with us or to our audience, hit us on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm. I'm going to turn over to Penny. Penny, can you give us some news?
Oh, hi, everybody. One interesting news item this week was the acquisition Plaid made of Quovo. So these are two data aggregation companies. They go in and either scrape or gather bank account data through an API and feed it into other apps like Mint or Robinhood or Betterment or something of that nature. So it's kind of interesting that this is still kind of a emerging market of data aggregation. Plaid's been a very aggressively growing aggregator. They've sometimes had a somewhat contentious relationship with banks where they don't want banks calling the shots and limiting what they can gather, and banks, you know, want to have some control over, you know, what's happening to their customers' data. But what this merger really brings to Plaid is Plaid has a number of fintech app partners or clients, basically, companies like Venmo and Coinbase and Acorns and such. And Quovo has more clients on sort of the wealth management side, like Betterment and Wealthfront. Although they also have SoFi and others, and both actually have relationships with banks. But the idea here is that with this combination, fintechs could really gather all kinds of consumer data in one place. You know, you could grab a customer's bank account data and their Betterment robo advisor information, and really give people that holistic view of all of their financial life. So that's the goal that they're trying to achieve with that And it also just shows Plaid's, you know, growth and success in this world. We also saw today that
so Penny, is this basically the U.S. version of open banking? What are you talking about?
I mean, you could definitely call it that. You know, U.S.
Although bank, using screen scraping sounds so 19th century these days. Isn't it?
Well, it's like they do whatever they can, but yeah, open banking here. Obviously, there's nothing forcing open banking. There's no regulation, but it's been like a grassroots movement by all these fintechs and data aggregators. So yeah, it's like do-it-yourself open banking, basically.
Yeah, you know, Penny, I'm curious on that front. Sorry to derail your news. Do you think actually the fact that you actually have a player that's kind of robustly pulled those things together, and you still have Yodlee. You know, Yodlee is actually still pretty strong, right? Owned by Envestnet, they have both bank and data, but we actually now have two players who are that robust. Do you think that maybe starts to tip some of the players into an open banking play?
I think they're being tipped already. I don't know that this would push them to do more. I think everybody is being forced into being more open, and even the banks, you know, Quovo had 215 banks sign up for direct APIs with Quovo. So they're really getting a lot, they were getting a lot of traction with the banks, and that will probably continue. So I think it's just sort of a movement. I think consumers are demanding the use of these kinds of apps, and so the banks can't really say no any longer. Now, of course, we don't have all of the restrictions that exist in Europe under, you know, all the rules saying, you know,
GDPR and so forth. Yeah,
right to be forgotten and all that sort of thing. So it's more of a Wild West here, of course, where, you know, there could be things could go wrong. Yeah, there could be some major security or privacy glitch that happens. But it,
or the government could get shut down.
Yeah.
Brett, that would never happen. Come on, man.
So what about N26? What's the news about them, Penny?
Well, they, as I'm sure you know, they're the European Challenger Bank. It's in 24 markets. They just got a $300 million infusion from a number of investors. That the investment round was led by private equity firm Insight Venture Partners. And what's interesting to me about that is that a lot of that $300 million is going to go into the U.S. unit, where they're building a challenger bank, kind of like you guys are. And they are, you know, they said they were planning to launch last June, and they have been a little bit held up by regulatory concerns. They've had to tweak their product to meet U.S. laws. Same. You probably know what that's like, right? And they also, you know, last year they were looking for a U.S. bank partner. Now they have a U.S. bank partner, although they can't say who it is yet. So, you know, they currently have about 30 employees in the U.S., but they still want to grow, and they are planning to launch sometime in the first half of this year. But, of course, this new round of money is a nice thing for them, and
we'll try and get Valentin on the show in the next few weeks to give us an update. Mm. Hopefully by then they'll be able to tell us who their partner is, but... Yeah, they're really going well.
Yeah, I think they've been, you know, they're putting all the pieces in place, and I spoke with Nicholas Cox.
$2.7 billion valuation, right?
$2.7 billion, right? They're a unicorn now, so yeah, it's you know, and they're basically going to. I was talking to Nicholas Cox this morning, and they're basically going to bring the current product from Germany over here, but they're going to sort of customize it to the U.S. audience, and it's not totally clear how they're going to do that, but it is, they are going to try to have some consistency in the product in different countries, even though there are differences in regulation and market and so forth. And another piece of news that came out this week was Affirm, which said they're going to be testing offering a savings account. Affirm, you know, is a pretty innovative fintech startup. They kind of created this new market of point-of-sale lending, where if you need to buy a couch, you can just get a loan very quickly on the spot, and they use artificial intelligence to help them make credit decisions using not even that much data, so they're able to do it very, very quickly. And, you know, I think it's interesting that they are jumping on this idea of offering a 2% savings account. I think the timing is good because I think, you know, interest rates are going up and Americans are going to start expecting their savings accounts to yield more. And banks are traditionally quite slow at actually giving people a better rate as interest rates increase. You know, they're quicker to raise loan rates, but not as quick to raise a deposit return rates. So, you know, it's a smart move, and they do have a bank partner, so I don't think they're going to go through what Robinhood went through, where they said they were going to have a 3% savings account, but they really didn't have they didn't have any form of FDIC approval or anything. So I don't know who Affirm's bank partner is, but they partner with Cross River Bank on the lending side. So it's possible that they are,
you know, they do have all that money to lend out. So, you know, they've got a mechanism, I guess, for underwriting the interest rates. But well, listen, Penny, thanks for that. I think we better get on to our first guest. But thanks for the news. Appreciate
it. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you know, you guys know I've been talking about voice first for some time. You know, the voice-based assistants, smart speakers, let's call it the voice revolution for some time. And if you've been watching the news at CES, you can see it's really starting to take off. Now, CES is often where you find the cutting edge of the new tech that we're going to see emerge over the next 2 to 3 years. You also see plenty of smoke and mirrors, but I thought we'd invite back to the show our voice first expert, Brian Romley, and to join him also is Elizabeth Robbins from Best Innovation Group. So, Brian and Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, Brian, you were roaming the halls of CES in Vegas this week. You know, you've been talking about this, obviously, since 2001 or even earlier. You know, what struck out, you know, what impacted you from CES this week?
Well, Brett, you kind of nailed it right there when you said smoke and mirrors. I mean, we go back to CES 2015, and there were maybe three announcements concerning voice. CES 2018 or 2019, the most recent one to this week, we're looking at literally thousands, including mirrors that you can talk to, glasses, ceiling fans,
literal,
table lamps.
Literal mirrors.
Literal mirrors that can adjust. Yeah, so there's smoke and mirrors. Obviously, CES shows thousands of devices that probably never really see the light of day in the consumer hands, but it does give a general directional of where this is going. I call it the voice for CES because there is no other dominant theme, and that is really something more than just what's going on with voice. It's becoming a new interface to all simple and complex devices. So it's something, it's a phenomenon that's not going away. It's just going to get better and better. Kohler, for example, is showing off a number of fixtures, for example, the shower last year, but the more sophisticated shower this year, sinks, all sorts of things of that nature. And, you know, it sounds sort of bizarre until you can tell a sink to give you exactly 12 ounces of water and then remembering that you had 12 ounces, things of that nature. But it goes on. I mean, even things that are tangentially related to voice. IBM released what I believe is the beginnings of the first personal quantum computer, the IBM Q1, I believe is the full name. And this is
It's a 20-qubit unit, but it could be the first, like, commercially available quantum computer for purchase.
Craziness.
Because, you know, we've always assumed that quantum computers would be in the cloud and would have to...
Exactly. And obviously, just like the first mainframes, this stuff is starting to become more and more readily available. And it is, you know, anybody studying quantum computers, it's a higher loss quantum environment. This stuff is only going to get better, meaning that it's not exactly ready for prime time. But we're definitely going in that direction. So between the quantum computer announcement and all the voice first devices, I think we are seeing the general direction over the next 3 to 5 years. And so it's quite exciting.
How does quantum voice and AI sort of come together?
Really good question, Brett. There's been this debate since the 1950s, essentially, that we need general artificial intelligence to really have decent conversational interfaces. And that's still being, you know, desperately held on to by even some of the most brilliant AI scientists and thought leaders. The reality is, if you have a multiverse, which is what the quantum computer is accessing, call it what you will, solving a problem in billions and billions of universes simultaneously, you don't really need general AI. You just need to solve it at those many levels. And I've done a lot of work on quantum computers down here in Southern California, one of the universities, let's say. And I've been very lucky to get access to the system after hours. And I've tested some of these ideas in artificial intelligence. Certainly, I'm not the first person to work in that area, but I'm using it specifically to educate us on how we can solve for complex questions and dialogues using quantum computers.
Well, I'd like to, you know, pause there for a second, Brian. And, you know, Elizabeth, Best Innovation Group, you know, you guys at BIG have been really looking at voice as it applies to financial services for a while, and even going so far as developing, you know, on your own. Can you share a little bit, where do you see the first application areas where, short of general AI or even being able to do the making up with that, with blood, sweat, and digital tears in computing power, where do you actually see some of the first use cases besides turning on music with Alexa and financial services?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think it's interesting that you mentioned blood and sweat, because right now, the voice-first solutions that most people are experiencing are a lot of code in the background. I will be so excited when we can really start seeing more actual AI being able to interface with the kinds of things that regular consumers use. So there's a lot of great AI being used right now for bots, and that's great. But I think what most consumers are using is a lot less AI than we realize. I'm really big on robots, and social robots are a great start. I think Sophia is something that I was really excited to see, because that's really the first step towards something that we'll actually be able to integrate with avatars. Dr. Clore and his whole avatar project, obviously a lot of those kinds of technologies. So we're having a great time working in the voice first world, and I think there's a lot more possibilities beyond what we're doing. You know, we're kind of enabling consumers to interact with their financial institutions, which is a good first step. We have a lot of demand for people in the financial institutions to be able to leverage things internally. So that's probably something that we're going to look at. But I would love to see more in the healthcare space, which I know is a big area that is up and coming right now, and I'm seeing a lot more news coming out of healthcare with regard to voice as well as AI. So I'm very excited about that. But I think that we're going to start seeing an explosion of new voice services with the great strides that Google has made this year, I think that's going to give a lot of incentive to some of the other voice services. And I am keeping a close eye on Samsung, both from a hardware perspective as well as from a voice service perspective, because I think we're going to see a lot of that. So I think the next couple of years, I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to Brian, because he's kind of one of those see around the corner guys that I like to keep track of and make sure that I'm not missing out on anything I should be doing.
So on that front, Brian, who was the big winner in terms of voice at CES? There was a lot of talk about performance of the various voice assistants, but what was your take on it?
Well, I did a study for a client. The largest amount of money ever spent at a trade show pretty much was Google this year. They made a Disneyland ride specifically promoting the Google Assistant and Voice First as a general concept. I mean, this is a company that was the number one winner, more or less, of the last two revolutions. Let's call it the Internet Revolution and the Mobile Revolution with Android. And here they are spending more money than any other company at CES. So in a sense, from a mindshare perspective, Google has gone way beyond anything I've seen at a trade show to try to grab mindshare. So I would say it's really neck and neck between Amazon and Google winning mindshare at the show. There's a lot of offside things that had taken place, but generally that I think is the most interesting aspect, just how much money they're willing to spend to get interest in their particular solution.
And you've been tweeting about this before, and of course I know the answer to this, but I'd like you to articulate on air. How big is the Alexa team getting these days?
It's over 11,000 people specifically dedicated just to Alexa.
Wait, 11,000 people?
I call it the Alexa Army, and there's nothing like this ever seen in technology.
That's not even a startup anymore. We're talking about a huge company in its own right.
Somebody did a financial analysis, Brett, where they basically said all the top five VC firms for the next 5 years are not even close to what Amazon is spending on Alexa per year. So we're talking about a tremendous investment. Jeff Bezos has a lot of things going on right now, obviously. The Fire Phone wasn't necessarily perfect, but it is amazing how much money is being on one thing for Amazon, and that's Alexa.
Okay, well, just quickly, Elizabeth, before we get to the break, who do you think is doing the best at voice in terms of financial services at the moment? You can make it U.S.-based.
Well, and I think right now it really is really geographically segmented. I know there's a lot of things going on in other parts of the world. I think there's a long way to go before... I think there's a breakthrough in voice from the financial services perspective. Right now, it's very fragmented, and companies are having to really claw to get across that barrier. So I'm hoping that 2019 will be the year that it becomes a lot easier for those of us that are building voice for financial services to start making those available.
Well, and hopefully, Elizabeth, it does not take you 11,000 people to build something cutting edge. And so I want to thank both Elizabeth and Brian for joining us today. And now it's time for a short break. And after that break, we're going to be joined by Alex Lightman, Ron Shevlin, Jim Marus, and myself. And we'll be talking about content. Although I know Alex, Ron, and Jim all have some strong opinions about voice, so we'll probably pick up there first. And so it's been picking up steam in a while around using content. It's just now starting to take root in financial services. But after the break, we'll talk, should your institution, should you as an expert, be launching a podcast? And now a short break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The Voice America Live Events Channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech podcast and radio show. This is Jason Henricks, and I'm joined by Jim Roos and Ron Shevlin, frequent visitors here. And we're excited to be talking about content with Alex Lightman. But before we do that, you know, the first half of the show is dedicated to voice first. And I know the three of you all have some perspectives on it. You know, Alex, as a futurist, can you give us a perspective? You know, if Brian kind of looks around the corner, can you tell us what's around the block as we think about what's coming up with voice?
Sure. Well, I want to give a compliment to futurist John Smart, because he wrote a report 20 years ago predicting exactly what's happening now would happen. And there's a very specific reason that this explosion is happening with voice first, or what some people are calling the smart speaker revolution. And that is, it's the general category of a replacement of the GUI, graphic or graphical user interface based on WIMP, Windows Icon Mouse Pointer, with a CUI, conversational user interface. In the early days of search engines, remember Lycos, and when Yahoo was the big search engine prior to Google, the search engines could get it right with one word. And then with mighty effort, they got two words. So you could do two-word searches. And then gradually, they were adding about a word every other year or so. So it wasn't exactly a Moore's Law barn burner. But we've gotten to the place where people can now type in 10 words or so. And that's long enough to make an average sentence in English and other languages that are structurally like it, so that you can understand the conversational context. And now that we've got there, we're really cooking with gas. So there's an annual survey, the Smart Speaker Sweepstakes, or Smart Speaker Survey. And what they found was that these smart speakers are improving their vocabulary and their image their voice recognition of and making sense of things. They've gone from less than 50% to more than 70% of the time. And typically, if you ask a bunch of questions or you try to talk with somebody and they don't understand you more than half the time, you just throw your hands up in frustration, you give up. But now that more than two-thirds of the conversation are understood, it's exciting and fun, and we should probably see by this time next year more than 90% recognition in a lot of this, and that's when this will really explode. So this may be the year of voice first. Next year will be probably likely the same. And this conversational user interface is going to be something that goes into all of our connected devices, everything that you connect. And I had a conversation with Dan Rosen at Microsoft more than 20 years ago at this Telecosm event. We were riding down to some party at Lake Tahoe, and I said, what's the most valuable thing you can tell me, because you fund research in 600 universities? And he said, Alex, everything that costs more than $50 but will be connected to the internet. And so now everything that can be connected to the internet will have a GUI, a conversational user interface.
Yep. And so on that front, you know, Jim, you and I, when we've shared this stage, and I love, you know, the example you use with Alexa and ordering, you know, things and deciding on dinner and what time to leave. What do you see coming up? If Alex just kind of gave us what's around the block, and I know you're, you know, if he's a futurist, you're a bit of a realist. What do you see for 2019 as it relates to voice that there's going to be a focus on, what we're going to really see come to reality?
Well, I think number one, when we're talking about financial services, I think we're really going to see that any organization is going to have some type of voice interface as part of their delivery. And that goes beyond just a search element. So I think, you know, the connection with Alexa, the connection with Google Home and the Apple device, you can't afford to be sitting on the sideline when it comes to voice search and voice interface. Now, the good news is the cost of doing so and the ability to do so is really gotten easier. And I think we're going to start to see in 2019, you referenced the example I give that's almost like a demo. I think we're going to start to see, as opposed to being used for search and answer, where voice is actually going to be used for reminders and information proactively. So with the combination of voice devices and all the information out there in AI, you're going to start to see voice devices talking to us and giving us information at the beginning of the day. We'd say good morning. Alexa would give us what's coming up in the day. Would start to talk to you about your calendar. Would give you suggestions as to where to go to eat and how to get there. What the weather forecast is going to be. But basically, it's all going to be customized. So you're going to be able to start your day off in a way that's custom to you, but it's going to give you the information you need on a proactive basis based on what has been learned in the past. So you're going to really move from a device that answers questions to ones that provides recommendations and becomes more of an advisor through AI. Obviously, the device is simply the delivery vehicle, but it's the most common one because you can use it everywhere. You can use it in your car. You can use it on your phone. You can use it on your device in your bedroom or in your living room or your kitchen. So I think that's going to be exciting.
Great. And so I think that's a great perspective as it relates to, you know, where we're headed. And, you know, if you doubt that voice is the future, remember when we all used to joke about, you know, kids don't know how to type. And if you were to go into a Target or a Best Buy or a Walmart, all of the screens have fingerprints because the kids, you know, think every screen can be touched. Well, just over this last holiday, my 23-month-old called me from my wife's phone using Siri, knowing that if she held the button down, she could say, call Jason Henrik's mobile. And lo and behold, I get a phone call. And so I think, you know, the future generation, you know, isn't even going to be used to screens. I think we're going to see more and more this voice-first perspective. And so, you know, if we think of voice as content in that proactive sense that you just said, Jim, why don't we shift gears a little bit back to what the second part was supposed to be around content. And Ron, we'd love for you to lead off. You know, before the holidays, we had that Twitter conversation going around creating content. You know, everyone seems to be getting on the content bandwagon. What do you think the implications are for financial services? You know, is content really necessary there? And what does it take to win?
Well, let's put this in a broader context. Why are you doing content in the first place? I mean, everybody positions it as content marketing, but it's really about engagement. And more, I think particularly every financial institution I talk to is concerned about their rate of engagement and their engagement strategy. And reality is you can't engage people with advertisements, especially in the banking arena. It doesn't work. It's not what people want. So you need some other form of mechanism, whether that content is written, video, or audio. So, you know, at this point, you want to engage your audience. You want to engage your customer or member base. It's become an absolute necessity to do that because you simply can't do that anymore just through the advertising mechanism.
Yeah. And, you know, that is a pretty good point. Now, Alex, you know, believe pretty firmly that if you want to have thought leadership, either as an institution or as an individual, you know, content is key to that. Can you tell us some of your perspectives on why is content so important?
Sure. I think that these days, where especially with all of the issues around the president, I've seen a statistic that he's lied over 15,000 times. And my concern is that that people are really reflecting upon legitimacy in a way that they never have before, because I don't think anyone would want to be as famous as he is and then have the can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, you're great.
Okay, great. Oh, it says unmute. So so I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't talking just to myself. So I think of legitimacy as being generated by doing three simple things: seek the truth, speak the truth, and practice what you preach. So executives making content, and I'll use myself as an example, I keep getting requests to have a TV show. So I created, as a birthday present for myself, YouTube channel. You just type in Alex Lightman, and I make these short videos on a single topic that's generally prompted by something that's in my environment so that the environment can trigger it. So I talked about, you know, on the very first one about what it was like to be at a yacht party on my birthday, or what it, this trend, I was at Art Basel and there was all this artwork that was otherworldly or extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. That's an actual category of art that people are collecting and buying now. And so doing it on that, but ultimately it matched with this idea of seeking the truth, what's actually happening, speaking the truth, and having a record of that. And then people can say, look, this is what you said you've stood for. Are you consistent with what you said you stood for? And so now we have the example on the day that this show is recorded that Donald Trump is saying that he never said that Mexico would directly pay for the wall. And I just cringe when I think of that. And I saw for the third time last night the Black Mirror episode Nosedive, in which Ron Howard's daughter, Bryce Dallas Howard, is a 4.2 on a 5.0 scale, looking to get into a special apartment by having a 4.5 so she could afford it, and basically destroying her entire life and all of her friendships and burning everything to the ground as she tried to be something that she wasn't. And so ultimately, I think that a lot of us are trying to reflect upon who are we, what do we stand for, what are our values, what are our truth, and then go and put that out there to the world. And what it does is, in my thought, it creates a high-frequency bird call, and it attracts the people who are like-minded to you, the people who have share your values, share your ethics, share your morals, share your passions, and then we can be surrounded by people and be ourselves with great authenticity while having this legitimacy that works for us even when we're not trying.
That's great. And so, you know, Jim, in addition to being a master content creator, you study, you know, most importantly, the content and the opinions of a lot within financial services and the consumers of that content, whether they be individuals or businesses. You know, I like that seek the truth, speak the truth, act the truth. In light of you know, some of the reputational problems that have taken place in financial services, where do you think, you know, we stand as banks and, you know, even some of the fintechs now, right? Robinhood kind of stepped right in the middle of it and then says, hey, startups are not always right. You know, can we actually speak the truth and act the truth credibly given our histories?
Well, it's interesting because, excuse me, when you look at the desire to use content to build trust, I think there's no better example right now. I don't know one in the financial services industry than what Wells Fargo's trying to do. Well, Wells Fargo obviously did not have a good 2017 and 2018, and yet what they're doing, they're totally moving away from a traditional sales model to an advisory and informational model that when you open an account with them now, you're going to be exposed to your options of content that will help you solve your financial needs. So what happens is they ask you questions along the way that are not overbearing, but then they give you content that you can learn about how to improve what you're trying to improve. So basically, instead of a push model, they're using a pull model. But what that does, it immediately puts in your mind as a consumer that they're out there looking out for me. And no organization probably is in such a trust, negative trust state than Wells Fargo was. And this is a great way for them to really engage consumers. And a lot of it is the short form, which we'll talk about quite a bit. But but the transition from long form to short form content, and the number of views and the way it helps in branding, but the, most importantly, the way it helps in trust. And you know, I suggest anybody that wants to see a financial institution that's really doing a lot of things in the whole content area, it's really right now Wells Fargo. And I'm not, no shameless plug there. There's no connection with me, but I will say that when I opened a recent account, I was really amazed at the way they had changed their entire way of presenting their organization to a brand new customer.
Well, hey, Jim, that's a great example. You know, but the thing I think I would want to alert people to is, first of all, that was in motion for a long time at Wells Fargo. And I know a lot of folks there who were pushing for that, you know, 3-4, even maybe 5 years ago. So, you know, it's in one respect, I think it's a great example. On the other hand, it's kind of sad that it took a crisis for them to change their strategy to move towards this. But I think the lesson for a lot of other institutions to learn is that this isn't an easy thing to emulate. I mean, they've been building this stuff for a long time, you know, attempting to see what works. It's not a, gee, you know, let's in Q2, we're going to go build some content and change our sales strategy. So while it did take the crisis to change it, I think it's important to recognize they've been building this stuff for a long time.
Well, and I think one of the important things, though, that Alex brought up is this: it's not enough just to say it. You have to act it, right? And so I do feel like Wells itself has undermined itself repeatedly that this may be in process for a long time and they're putting a lot of energy behind it, but they continue to like shoot themselves in the foot along the way every time. And Alex, I want to turn it back to you for a second, and Ron, I'll give you first shot to respond. But Alex, when you get to this, you know, kind of seek the truth, speak the truth, act the truth, how do you build that connectivity between, you know, both the speak and the act in terms of backing it up in a credible fashion? That seems like a really hard thing to do without seeming self-promoting or self-interested.
Well, one of the things that's exciting about today is that many people are asked to focus. I read recently that when Bill Gates and Warren Buffett were asked together, what's the secret of their success, they both said the same thing: focus. I think you have to pick the topics that you're going to focus on. And I remember once I worked for a company that was the very first publicly traded artificial intelligence software company. I'm the first person to sell $1 million worth of artificial intelligence software. And believe it or not, this was back in 1985. And the founder of the company was the head of AI research at Stanford, Edward Feigenbaum. And his daughter was a friend of mine, brought me home, and I said, what's the most valuable thing you can tell me for my whole career? And he said, become the world expert in something, because nobody knows who number two is and everyone knows who number one is. And I said, how do you become the world expert? He said, well, you either battle it out in a battle royale and say at the top of the mountain through publishing and speaking, and that's very hard and it's very improbable, or go and find a new field. Look at where what Wayne Gretzky later said, skate to where the puck is going, but create a new field. And by being the creator of the field, you also are, for at least a period of time, you're the authority, because you say what the narrative frame of the field is. And so I would say that you have to pick your shots. You have to focus on at most three things that you're known for, and then become the world authority in those areas. And you do that by writing books, giving talks. And this is something that I do that I don't know anyone else does. I never give the same speech twice. I gave 30 keynotes in 20 countries last year. I never repeated myself as a whole speech. Now, there are some slides that go from talk to talk, but never the whole talk. And so people can always know if they're going to see it, it's not going to be a repeat. So those are some of the things between seeking the truth. And also, if you say the words, if you actually keep on coming back and you talk about legitimacy and you just say, seek the truth, speak the truth, practice what you preach, I can tell you from my own life that if I'm even a little bit out of consistency with that, like if my girlfriend sees me wanting to eat any carbs or something, then she'll say, well, what about you, Mr. Legitimacy kind of thing. And then you sort of burn your bridges, and you make it so everybody around you has gleeful fun and takes perverse pleasure in pointing out even small inconsistencies. That's how I would recommend it.
That's great, Ron. You know, what are your thoughts? So I think Alex gave us a really good perspective on the individual. How does the institution, you know, bridge that? Because they can't give keynotes or write the books, or I guess they could write a book, but it'd be pretty interesting around that. How does an institution kind of bridge that gap between speaking and the credibility of their actions?
Yeah, I think Alex's comments are great at the individual level. I think it's good, tough for a financial institution to do that because while, you know, the prescription to focus is great, it's kind of tough for an institution to do that. But I think the kind of the lesson I would take out of Alex's comments that I think can be applied to the world of banking is about developing a voice. I mean, Alex talks about being authentic, but I haven't read Alex, so sorry about that, Alex. But I bet you if I read it, I would have over time, you know your voice. I think people who've read stuff I've written, you know, especially since I call my stuff snarketing, and now the new one is called the FinTech Snark Tank, you know that there's going to be a bit of snarkiness in there. So an institution, I would certainly not recommend them going down the snarky route, but they can develop a voice. You know, something that helps them stick out. They're going to have to develop content that cuts across the lines of, you know, the product lines in the banking world. They're going to have to develop content that cuts across the spectrum of different types of consumers and so forth. But they can strive to have a kind of a voice that stands out from the rest of the world so that it's not your old typical boring financial education type of stuff that you see on practically every site that doesn't stand out at all. So I think the lesson I take from Alex is to the institutions is, you know, develop a unique voice.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know who I love that does a great job of that is Wendy's. Now, I can't tell you the last time I've gone to Wendy's, but man, I love what they do on Twitter and social in terms of having a unique voice. And, you know, back in the day when it was Bank Simple, you know, Simple used to have a pretty unique voice, but one of the challenges there is oftentimes they, while being unique and consistent, were not always actually, air quotes, consistent with the regulatory and what you're actually kind of allowed to do as a financial institution, you know, and that can be a challenge. And, you know, Alex, I'd love for you to, you know, respond to what Ron was saying.
Well, my basic answer to your question of how does it work for an individual is that you pick a definition, a measure, a metric, and an equation for something. So when I talk about the blockchain, the purpose of the blockchain is to, in my mind, to minimize the latency of achieving consensus. And so if you have a bank or any kind of financial services, it's relatively simple to create a measure of latency. How long does it take on average to execute a trade? How long does, on average, does it take to respond to a consumer or settle a complaint or something, and then say, hey, here's our measure and here's how we're improving? That's how you have thought leadership, and that's how you focus an organization without having to write a book or give keynotes and so on. Since we're in the closing thing, I had mentioned to Brett, who's my, by the way, I should say, Brett and I are co-authors. Brett's the principal author of the book Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which is a book that talks about a lot of these and other topics. But I'm doing an executive crash course in blockchain on behalf of Kingsland University in Miami next week. And I'm happy if somebody wants a scholarship to choose one person who's listening to the show today and give them the scholarship to the executive course, which is how executives and entrepreneurs can apply blockchain.
That's great. And, you know, as we get to a wrap here, you know, Ron, Jim, each one sentence and only one sentence. If you're going to, as a financial institution, begin to create content, you should fill in the blank.
Yeah, Jim.
Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, I'll go. You should pick a channel. Focus on that channel, not just the topic, but the channel. Twitter, YouTube, whatever it might be. Focus on one.
Jim?
Mine would be to work first on product education. It's very easy to develop a really quick content thing for, let's say, remote deposit capture. Educate your customers. It's a good way to get started.
Fantastic. So, you know, today's show is brought to you by the Digital Banking Report, and this is one of those places you can learn about what you should be focused on. Bank and credit union executives and solution providers from more than 300 companies worldwide use insights from the DBR to keep pace with digital transformation in financial services. Look for the massive, as Jim said, 118 pages worth of 2019 trends and predictions, which just went live. And you can actually save $500 off the annual subscription by using the code BREAKINGBANKS at checkout. So go to digitalbankingreport.com as soon as we're done here. Thanks to all of our guests this week, Elizabeth Robbins, Brian Romilet, Alex Lightman, and our guest co-hosts, Penny Crossman, Jim Roos, and Ron Shevlin. We always love having you on the show. And we also appreciate your feedback, questions, and suggestions from listeners. Reach out at Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm. And if you're interested in sponsoring a show or segment, drop us a line. We're pretty full for Q1, but we are actually, you know, lining up the queue for Q2 right now. So it's our sponsors that really make this show possible. And last, if you like the show, if you can take just a minute to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, it really helps spread the word. And that's how we reach millions of listeners around the globe. And that's it for this week. We'll see you again next week for more Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.